And a good Saturday morning to you from our St. Hubert's Cathedral Annex here in Baldwin County, Alabama, just a stone's throw away from the 92nd Annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. It's going on and wrap up today on Dauphin Island. One of the big ones. They're going to be weighing in between 6,000 and 8,000 fish is what they predicted. And it's the 92nd year, and they're going to be fishing for almost $1 million in cash and prizes. Got a contender 26-foot bay boat with a Yamaha 250. That's going to be given away later this evening. Wraps up at 5 p.m. tonight. So if you want to drop by and see some of the big fish, the shark category that they resurrected really creates a lot of interest. In fact, they had one a couple years ago at the rodeo. It was over a 1,000-pound tiger shark, broke the rodeo record and also the Alabama state record. So lots going on, and it looks like the weather, which we'll get to in a minute, is going to participate or cooperate at least for this last day of the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Good luck to all you contestants that are getting ready to head out. Well, there are two important deadlines that are approaching. Many of you might want to take advantage of. I found this out from attending a couple of meetings, one dealing with the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries setting the duck hunting zones and season splits for the next 5 years. When we talk to our field reporter, Ryan Lambert, we'll be joined by Josh Goins with the Flyway Federation and talk about what they see as an impediment to tidal area waterfowl hunters and some action that actually got to be quick action for you to take to avoid that. Also, the Lake Maurepas area residents, they had a town hall meeting in Ponchatoula I went to. They were there with their elected officials. And the townspeople and the citizens are strongly opposed to a company called Air Products. They got a plan to transport and store carbon underneath Lake Maurepas. Pipe it in as a gas from the Mississippi River underground and then store it there with some facilities on some wellheads all assigned throughout the lake. Anyway, a lot of questions about this. It's a sensitive environment. People live, work, and play. And I got to agree with their concerns about it moving too fast. There's too many unanswered questions about the safety and the liability. If you were at that meeting and you got an opinion on that, text me, 504-260-1870. Also, Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has released the latest red snapper harvest update. We'll cover that. And are you loaded for bear? That's right, at the second bear season. They're getting ready to allow you to apply for the permits if you'd like to hunt bear in Louisiana. We've got some details on that for you. And the month of July, it's dotted all over with fishing rodeos and tournaments. We'll continue to give you some of the details. And you're going to hear from the first place Blue Marlin Grand Champion in last weekend's Billfish Unlimited Tournament. His team name? Grocery Aisle, and maybe that's a hint to his identity. He'll tell you a story coming up a little bit later on. I want to remind you, if you had a successful fishing trip this week, we'd love to include the details, where you were, how you caught the fish, what you caught, and we can add that to your comments, your questions, and we'll put it in, excuse me, with the reports of our professional captains and marina operators. You can do that by texting your message real time into the studio here at 504-260-1870. Quick look at your weather. Calm down. A lot of the consternation about the Gulf storm, a tropical depression, all that's kind of moved out. Going to be some rain around for sure, but the winds offshore are going to be south 5 to 10. That's ideal. Southwest winds on the interior lakes and bays about 5 knots. Smooth conditions and a rock and rolling tide. 1.7 foot is the average tide range. And the Mississippi River, the bottom is dropping out. It's down to 7-8 and continuing to fall. Stage is set for a great summer weekend of fishing. If you're not getting in on it, you're missing out. We'll tell you some more details, get some reports from all of our field reporters, and a whole lot more coming up right here on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. And Campos Marina has been the launch spot this summer for some really great speckled trout fishing, one of the better years I can remember. And Robbie Campo is the guy that sends them out with live bait and puts the boats in the water. Robbie, how's things looking this morning?
Well, Don, we got a little light southwest wind. Yesterday, that was a different story. We had about a 15-mile-an-hour wind here most of the day yesterday. And that made fishing really, really tough. They did okay earlier in the week. Yesterday was brutal, man. I'm telling you, I don't know if we've seen a good box of fish come in between all the boats yesterday. You know, it was 7-8 fish. Some people had 20. you know, a couple redfish. It was just, you know, that southwest wind makes it really, really tough for fishing. And yesterday that seemed to be what happened. And it's not that the fish just left or any, they're there. They just don't bite with a west wind for some reason around here. It's been, you know, it was just a little bit tough. This morning, you know, hardly any wind here at all, less than 2 miles an hour. So hopefully these guys can get out this morning and go poke around Anastasia, the rocks maybe, up on those oyster reefs. What did bite yesterday was plenty white trout. They did catch plenty white trout yesterday, but speckled trout was a whole different story. So, you know, if you want to go fish white trout over the oyster reefs, that's hitting, man. That's on like wildfire. But I think those things will bite. It don't matter what the wind blows, you know, those fish bite. You know, it really don't make a difference what kind of wind you got, Don. They just bite.
Well, that's a good species to catch. I mean, you know, they're just one little cut below the speckled trout. And if you know how to handle them in the ice chest, keep them good and cold, and, you know, they're just as tasty as the speckled trout are. And they fight hard, too, but they just don't get as big. But you can catch all you want right now. There's no size limits. There's no minimum length or anything like that. So you can just wear them out if you can't find anything else. But I think things are going to get better today because that wind is going to be a lot lighter today than it was. But you're right. Anything with west in it, when that W is in it, most of southeast Louisiana just gets really tough to fish.
Yeah, and you know, I said that held true yesterday. I mean, it was brutal. I'm telling you, Don, I swear, I don't think we've seen a good box of fish come in. You know, Jonathan Sanchez, he's one of the top dogs around here for fishing in this sound. And when Jonathan couldn't make it happen yesterday, that says something. It was really brutal. You know, he's a great fisherman. And there's amongst a bunch of them, they all good fishermen, that southwest wind just killed it yesterday for us. But hopefully today, you know, it's kind of like hit the reset button, go out there and start, you know, boat spread out and start trying again. And, you know, hopefully this river comes down here really, really soon and those fish will start working a little bit westward. I did hear of a little bit of action happening over around that Stone Island area, so that's telling me that something's, that things are starting to happen over there a little bit. Hopefully, I know Breton Island was good earlier in the week, and the guys that fished out on the surf did good. It was just yesterday that was the Debbie Downer yesterday, but hopefully today these guys get out there, like I said, hit the reset button and start getting some fish. You know, look, Don, but if you come in today and your day's the day to fish, well, hook the left at the bridge and come on down and see us. Our tanks are full and we're waiting on you.
What size are the shrimp that you got right now?
I would say they're going anywhere from a 70, 80. I think they're probably about a 70, 80 count. Perfect bait shrimp, Don. They're beautiful, you know. But we're starting to get into that transition area where, you know, we're turning from brown shrimp to white shrimp. So the whites have showed up, but we're still catching some brown shrimp mixed with them. But I don't believe that's gonna last for too much longer. I think before probably the end of this month, it'll be, you know, they'll turn all white shrimp.
Mm-hmm. I tell you, Robbie, sometimes I question my sanity when I grab a 16-20 and put a hook in and throw it out there in the water instead of putting it in the pan or on the grill, you know?
Well, these white shrimp are far from 16-20, so, you know, when they show up, the eyeballs and whiskers, and, you know, I say this every year, you know, your local bait catcher goes from a hero to a zero overnight, you know, so, you know, because they've been having decent bait all, for the past, you know, throughout the summer, and then they come here and they have eyeballs and whiskers, and you start getting some dirty looks, you know. But, hey, I got a sign up that says we don't grow them, we just catch them, you know, so.
Right.
It is what it is.
Robbie, give me a quick tip for, you know, it's We got the hot weather right now and more of it to come. Quick tip on keeping that live bait alive when it's hot like this.
I tell you, Don, the best thing that you could do is either Ziploc bags with ice in it or freeze some water bottles and put it in your water. The other thing that I see that helps keep these shrimp alive, there's a product out there made by TH Marine. It's called G-Juice. The tournament fishermen use it, and we have it here. It comes in a little bottle. You know, you squeeze so much of it in a little side funnel, and you pour it into your bait well. And, you know, it's like a half an ounce for 30 gallons or whatever. A 30-gallon bait well, that's what most people have. And it turns your water blue, and that helps keep them alive. You know, but the most important thing is to cool your water off. If you can cool that water off and keep that temperature of that water, and try not to change it all the time, because if you're running down, let's say you're running down a Mr. Go and you're going to Long Rocks, and from here the water salinity is 5 parts per thousand, and you get on the other side of the dam and the water salinity is 16 parts per thousand. Well, you shock these shrimp because they can't handle that. The change of the salinity that quick. They'll transition theirself through it when they're heading out, but on a 40 miles an hour boat ride, you know, that kind of shocks them, and that will kill them. So recirculate your same water that you get from the marina here until you get where you're going, and if you're going to change it out a little at a time and acclimate them into that saltier water. I would recommend not even doing that. I just take and leave the same water in there for as long as you can. Just cool it off as much as you can.
All right, good advice. And we'll tell them to ask for the G-Juice. Thank you for the report, Robbie, as always.
All right, Don, talk to you next week. Tight lines, people.
All righty, there he goes, Robbie Campo. More reports ahead on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. All right, we got some of our listeners checking in. Wingbone Turkey Call Maker, he's applying his trade right now. Listen to us over in Wilmer. And we have Taft and his dad, Jerry, Klein Peter. They're headed to Bayou Sorrel to do some bass fishing. Well, Taft, if y'all get there and you got some time, shoot me a text before we go off the air and give me some conditions of what you find over there. I'd love to get a good report from Bayou Sorrel. All right, the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries released the latest red snapper landing estimates. This is through July 6th, and at that time, we were at 45.6% of the total allocation. That's about 407 and some change pounds of snapper. We have a total to catch of 894,955. So I would say now that we're at the 19th and the 20th of July, we're probably right about the 50% mark, about halfway there. Still got plenty of time to get out there. Remember, it's a 4 fish per person limit and a 16-inch on the minimum size. All right, do we have any bear hunters out there? Well, if you're interested in hunting black bear in Louisiana, they're getting ready to take applications for the lottery. Well, you can apply for a permit. That will begin July 28th and go for a month through August 28th. The Department of Wildlife and Fisheries will conduct this lottery. It's restricted to residents only, so non-residents can't apply. And if you do get chosen for the hunts, you'll be required to attend a bear hunter training course. Now, if you want to apply, you can find the applications on their website. It's pretty easy to find. Just go to Wildlife and Fisheries, and you'll find it there. And you have to put up a $50 non-refundable application fee. Each applicant will be charged, and you will be notified via email if you are selected. There's three types of permits, which is a WMA, then there's the private landowner, and also a general. So this was very successful last year. It was a little bit controversial because most people know the story. The black bear was very near extinction in Louisiana. There was a designation and scientific evidence that we actually had a subspecies of black bear here in Louisiana. And people were delighted that they were starting to see wild bears. Well, it was one of those things that maybe got a little too productive And bears have been causing some damage and problems and getting too close to the residents. Although, look, hey, it was their land first, and we kind of moved in on it, so we've got to coexist. But only the mature male bears are taken. There's a 75-pound rule. No sows can be taken. And it's what you would call an amount of the species that can be harvested without impacting the total population. So if you're interested in becoming a bear hunter in Louisiana, these hunts take place mostly in northeastern part of the state. You can find out all the details. Go to the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries website, and you'll see it there. That's for the Louisiana black bear hunting. All right, Lake Maurepas had a town hall meeting was held in Ponchatoula this week. Tuesday evening, I went there and heard from some of the elected officials, Senator Bill Wheat, Representative Muscarello, Representative Kim Coates, and Representative Shane Mack. And they kind of put out some information, all of them, as were the majority, if not everyone that was at that meeting, is in opposition to, if you haven't heard about this, a company called Air Products is applying for an Army Corps of Engineers permit to do a project whereby they would lay some underground pipe from the Mississippi River, go underground into Lake Maurepas, which would be drilled and it would be stored underneath the lake bed. It also consists of some platforms that would have to be put out there, and there's a lot of concern about environmental damage. And, in fact, Representative Coates did a very good job. She kind of compared this to shell dredging in Lake Pontchartrain. And one of the surprising things, and I was astonished, that there's been no environmental impact statement required for this permit. And people are asking for it. So far, it's been denied. There's a July 30th deadline, and they are asking you to contact your elected officials. There's actually a form letter addressed to the Corps of Engineers that you can get, and you can submit that to them in the public comments. And at the very best, maybe delay this until an EIS can be conducted and some more information gets out about this, the continuum about safety, about slow leak effects, what would happen if there's a catastrophic failure, and also some boating obstructions in the lake itself. Lake Maurepas is being chosen to be a carbon capture project. It's called carbon sequestration. And if you want to find out more about it, I'm sure you can find it all over the Internet. And also that Army Corps of Engineers is where the permit's going to be either issued or denied. All right, we got more to talk about when we come back. Get your text messages in, 504-260-1870. Put it into your phone bank so you can every Saturday morning shoot us a text. No photos. We can't do photos. If you want to send me some pictures of your catch, you can do that on my website. Go to DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com and use the contact button. We're back right after this 3-minute pause on The Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. All right, some of you are asking for a little more information on the Lake Maurepas issue. I'll get to that in a second. Also got some text messages coming in. If you'd like to shoot us one, 504-260-1870. Also got a bad boy feature for those of you who like to listen to that, and I know a lot of you do because you tell me you do. This morning's culprit has got about a $250,000 fine, and he's sitting in jail for 1 year. We'll tell you his story a little bit later on. All right, we're going to take a short 10-second pause for station identification, and we'll be back with more of The Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. All right, checking our text board, we got an Ohio listener checking in. Says, a beautiful mist o'er the fields. Good morning to y'all, and remember, when that river be dropping, them fish be popping. Okay, that's a little poetry there from our Ohio listener. All right, Big Man Bassin in Covington's checking in. He wants to know, is it best to put some kind of a mess? Well, it came out as mess. That autocorrect can be a problem. Actually, mesh fabric in a live well for the shrimp to cling to. Please advise. I'm not sure what that would accomplish. Maybe would keep the shrimp from, you know, getting bounced around and against the sides of the well. But you really need to be careful because if you got an air pump in there, an aerator, and that fabric would get clogged on it, and you could cut the air off and give them an oxygen problem there. So I don't know. I think that may do a little bit more harm than good. But if anybody does that and uses it and it's been successful, shoot us a text. Let us know. 504-260-1870. I have another text coming in saying that Lake Maurepas project sounds like another grass carp in Caney Lake situation to me. Those of you not familiar with Caney Lake, it's up in just pretty much in northeast Louisiana. I have fished there before. The story of Caney Lake was it was one of those reservoirs converted into a lake, and when we had the quality and trophy bass program in Louisiana, it was designated. And it went through the New Lake Syndrome, which is when they create a new reservoir and impoundment. It goes off the chart as far as the quality of the fish. And then it kind of goes back down and as the years go by. But Caney was producing a number of record bass. The fishing there was incredible. And they started to get a problem with the grass, which is basically habitat for fish. So the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries implemented a program where they introduced grass carp to eat the grass. And it was supposed to be carp that had been created to where they would be, where they could not reproduce. So when they went in there and ate the grass and lived out their life and died, it would be over with. Well, they miscalculated that the carp would reproduce, and they were not sterile. Not only did they reproduce, but they ate all the grass and the habitat, and the fishing went way downhill in Caney Lake, to the point where they had to put tires along the shoreline to try to create some artificial habitat to replace the grass. So it was kind of create a Frankenstein monster situation. From what I understand now, and those of you who fish Caney Lake, maybe let me know, the fishing's kind of gotten back up. They got they had some special bow fishing regulations, and they were trying to eliminate the grass carp. They created the problem and tried to solve it, and I think they've pretty much got it under control now. They tell me the grass is coming back. But this Lake Maurepas situation is different. This is a company called Air Products, and what they want to do is they want to store carbon dioxide underneath the bed of Lake Maurepas. I looked at a diagram of the project. There's 17 structures, control platforms and smaller platforms, one on the south end of the lake and one on the north end. In total, there'd be about 17 of these platforms, which would be certainly boating obstructions out there. There's also some concern. They've been kind of doing some blasting in the lake and disturbing the shell, the bottom. And a lot of people think, because similar to Lake Pontchartrain, a lot of toxins are stored down in that mud, and this would certainly send it up into the water column. There's a lot of concern about the safety and what happens if the pipe leaks, who will be liable, who's responsible for that, what about a catastrophic failure of the project. I don't know. It's got a lot of questions, and it's moving very fast. And this town hall meeting in Ponchatoula was held to get people alarmed and to contact the Army Corps of Engineers and maybe your elected officials. If you live in that area, let them know how you feel. You know, I'm all about risk versus reward, and certainly this is going to create some jobs and revenue. It's another part of the industry, but the risk at this point, from what I see, is not worth the reward. So if you want to get in on it, check it out. It's called the Lake Maurepas Project. You can find information on the Louisiana Wildlife Federation website and also the Army Corps of Engineers. It kind of explains what the permit's all about. And I think at least they should delay it and the permit issuing until they do a complete environmental impact statement and study what the possible effects of this would be. Anyway, we'll be back to take your text messages and tell you some more rodeos that'll be held next week as we close out July and head into the month of August. You're listening to The Outdoors with Don Dubuque, Radio Network. All right, checking our text message board. We're hearing from the backstrap stacker. He said, for the most part, the weather's held off for that Alabama deep-sea fishing rodeo. Wishing good luck to everyone on the water. And another text says, bye-bye to the Mid-Barataria sediment. Boondoggle, that idea bothered me from the beginning. I dislike the Lake Maurepas plan, too. And goes on to say the issue was that if things go wrong, Southwest Plaquemines would become an island. Regard to the Mid-Barataria project, which has been canceled. All right, when I opened the show, I told you there were two issues that needed attention pretty soon. One was that Lake Maurepas event, because they will be issuing that permit shortly, unless there's enough opposition to delay it until an environmental impact study can be done. The other issue is the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries is going to make selections, the commission, on the next five, not this year, but the next five waterfowl seasons as far as zones and splits. And as I told you last week, they sent random surveys out to 66,651 harvest information permit holders. Of that 66,000, almost 12,000 were either non-residents or had a harvest information permit but didn't get to hunt during the season, so those were eliminated. The only usable responses came from just under 9,000 people, and of course, along with other things that showed overwhelming dissatisfaction with the duck hunting in Louisiana, a lot of reasons for that. The majority supported Saturday openings, late as possible teal season and early Canada goose season, no ban on motorized spinning wing decoys, whistling ducks to be expanded to the early teal season, and opening up state public lands beyond a noon closure. But also they are going to be making a decision on the zones and the splits. And you've probably heard myself and Ryan Lambert talk about this, about the preference for a coastal zone. There were four options that were presented to these people who responded. And one was the same as what we've got, an east and west. And then there's an option B, which is almost a coastal, but a little bit variation. Then you got another east-west, but with a line drawn a little bit more to the west, opening up pretty much all of southeast Louisiana coastal, and up in Monroe would have the same seasons. Now, option D gives you basically a coastal zone. It's lower Louisiana and then the upper part, say, from Lake Pontchartrain going north. The entire coastal area. And the advantage of that is it would allow the seasons to be set in coordination with tides, because once you get negative tides, you're shot. You have no access. So you lose days. And I don't know, you know, they do these random sendouts and instead of, but they do open it up for public comment. And when we talk to Josh Goins and Ryan Lambert, who are both supporting that option D, we'll also tell you how you can get involved and who to contact about that, because time is running short before the next commission meeting when they'll make the decision. If they don't make a recommendation, we get the same zone, which is what we've had, which was the option A. And it's a little bit confusing because Venice and Breton Sound and Biloxi, all of that is in the west zone. Okay, does that make sense? Shreveport, Lake Charles being in the west zone, yeah, that makes sense. But the west zone for Venice and Burris and Lafitte, no, that doesn't make sense. So we'll talk more about that when we get those guys on the air. All right, we got this one says carbon sequestration underneath the lake bed has a risk of CO2 leaking into the above water, creating carbonic acid and lowering the pH of the entire lake. Not good for sea life. I feel someone's only seeing the dollar signs, but they may be an illusion. That's from one of our regular listeners, Old Man Sam. All right, if you've got a comment or a question, 504-260-1870 is the text line. All right, we got rodeos still to come. The one they call the granddaddy of them all. It's the oldest rodeo around. Been that way for a long time. The Grand Isle Tarpon Rodeo will be kicking off this Thursday at the Tarpon Rodeo Pavilion in Grand Isle. It kicks off Thursday. That's when they have the very popular Kids Crab Race. You got to watch that. They can sign up for it at 2 p.m. And they'll be opening up the scales from 11 to 6 for weighing in fish. And again, Friday, same deal. We've got DJ and activities at the pavilion. And then it all wraps up 1 week from today, and they'll have the scales shutting down about 6 o'clock for the adult divisions, and then the awards will be presented at 8:30, and they give the grand prize drawing till 9:15. Of course, they got a party that goes on there with live music and food. So that's the Grand Isle Rodeo coming up next weekend. And also next weekend, starting July 31st, actually this will be in 2 weeks, the Billfish Unlimited. This is the Mobile Big Game Fishing Club's big one. It's at the dock in Orange Beach. And this is another big money tournament, and if you're interested in it, check it out. It's the MBGFC, Billfish Unlimited Tournament, July 31st through August the 3rd. Also, these fishing rodeos, even if you don't participate, are great spectator events. And we also have the 75th Annual Empire South Pass Rodeo. That's going to be July 31st, August 1st, and August 2nd. That one will be at the Empire Boat Harbor, and we'll have more details on that coming up. But right after this, coming up, we got Darrell Carpenter. He checks in with us every week to give us a report from the Grand Isle Fouchon areas. He's next on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. And let's check in with Captain Darrell Carpenter of RealScreamers.com and get a sufficient report. And, Darrell, the weather was a little iffy this week at best. And, you know, there was a possibility that that little system moved in, could have turned into a tropical depression or a storm. And fortunately, it stayed inland enough to where it couldn't pick up any speed and quality. So it just gave us a lot of rain and some winds out of the west. What's going on down there?
Well, Don, it's for us anyway. It's kind of slow because it, all the fear mongering, if you will, scared both of. We had two trade association rodeos on the island this weekend, and both of them pretty much just canceled the entire rodeo. So for us, it's kind of a sit back and take care of honeydew this weekend. If you're looking at the 30,000 foot view, I can tell you that, you know, the question is when's this water going to clean up? Because we did have enough of that west-northwest wind that it muddied things up really bad. Now, we've got big tide ranges. If we get some good tide water and some good movement coming in, then hopefully it'll clean up quickly. There again, the 30,000-foot view is you can tell by what's being caught and what's hanging out of their mouths that the fish are starting to turn real heavy on the shrimp. We've got just an abundant shrimp crop this year. I mean, I haven't seen shrimp like this since I've been involved in it. And all the fish you're catching, we've got shrimp whiskers hanging out their mouth. They're chasing schools of shrimp. We've got birds flopping. And, you know, it looks like it's going to set up to be a pretty good one. We just need to let this calm down and let it replace, you know, let the good, clean water come back in. In fact, last week, right before the storm came in, Don, we had a couple of little mini jubilees, if you will. So the storm may not have been a bad thing. It may have stirred things up a little bit. I drove out to the beach one morning when I was off, and they were out there literally standing on the dry sand and throwing cast nets into 6 inches of water, and we're catching just those big 10, 12-count shrimp everywhere. And at the same time, you had hundreds, if not thousands, of ribbon fish that were up on the surface, kind of swimming on their side, gasping for air. So, you know, we had some stale water issues starting to show up. Hopefully the storm stirred it up. But at the same time, that day when that was happening, a little north-south-oriented rip came through and pushed the dirty water out, which is where all this was taking place, and good, clean Gulf water moved in. And all that action kind of stopped. So, you know, maybe this storm stirred it up just a little bit to where we get rid of some of that stale water that we typically start seeing this time of the year. And all we need to do is let it clean up. If they're hitting shrimp, of course, live shrimp's a great thing to have on hand. But 9 out of 10 times if they're hitting shrimp, they're going to hit plastic. You just got to find the right one.
Now, you mentioned Jubilee, and people over here in Alabama are very familiar with that because they pretty much count on having some each year. But Grand Isle is also another place, not quite as frequent. Explain what a Jubilee is, because a lot of people are not familiar with that.
Well, in this particular case, it was shrimp. But what happens is when you get this dead zone from the heat,
did we lose Darrell? I think with Darrell, let's see if we get him back. Yeah, you're back with us. Go ahead, continue.
Yeah, shrimp are all up on the top trying to breathe and stuff. Now, a week or two ago, we had the incident, the same deal with the flounder. But it's a low water, a low oxygen condition in the water where a lot of the fish, the shrimp, the crabs will actually leave the water trying to breathe just because they're smothering where they are. So that can have negative impacts because it can move our schools of fish to where they're finding better water. But like I said, a little storm like this oftentimes will stir it up and eliminate that condition.
And when it happens, a lot of people run to the beaches with their scoop nets and scoop them up. And a lot of times people have to remember that possession limits are still in force, you know.
That is correct.
Well, Darrell, give us your contact information if somebody wants to get a hold of you and schedule a trip for the summer before the kids get back in school. You probably got a couple openings. Let them know how to get you.
Oh, yeah, Don, it's plenty of openings. And look, after the kids go back to school, the crowds get less and the adults get to go play, right?
But that's exactly right.
They can find me on your website at DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com. I'm listed there along with your other guys. RealScreamers.com, or just pick up the phone at 225-937-6288.
All right, tight lines, Darrell. We'll check in with you next week.
Thank you, Don.
There he goes, Captain Darrell Carpenter. All right, we're approaching the top of the hour. When we come back, we're going to hear from Donnie Rouse. Donnie Rouse, a lot of you know, the CEO of Rouse's Groceries. Big winner in last weekend's Billfish Tournament over at the Wharf in Orange Beach, probably about 20 minutes from where I am. He'll tell you the story of the big one that did not get away. We're also got reports coming from Captain Mike Gallo and Bill Ridgel will be checking in with us with our paddler's report. And we also, I'm sorry, Butch Ridgel. And we also have Captain Ryan Lambert and Josh Goins are going to join us to talk about why you may want to get a letter off to the commissioners regard to duck hunting seasons before the next commission meeting. And also about a website and also a podcast called the Flyway Series if you are concerned about why the duck hunting has gotten so poor here in Louisiana and how that might be getting turned around. We also got a bad boy, the outdoor story for you. A guy sitting in jail, he's going to be there for a year, and a $250,000 fine. You will be amazed at what he was doing and how he got caught. All that's coming up in the second hour right here on The Outdoors with Don Dubuque, Radio Network. And welcome back in hour number two of the Outdoor Show. And, you know, just about 1 week ago, probably 20 minutes south of where I'm broadcasting here in Baldwin County, there was a big fishing rodeo going on, a tournament, the Billfish Unlimited. And the winning marlin was 124-inch, 746.2-pound blue marlin. And the gentleman that caught it joins us now, and from one Donnie to another, Donnie Rouse. Donnie, congratulations on this big fish, man. What a catch.
I appreciate it, Don. Good morning.
Give us a little description of what went on. Yeah, what went on? Now, how far did you go to find the fish?
Yeah, sure. I was it's about 150 miles south of Terrebonne Parish, and which put me 270 miles or so from Orange Beach, where the tournament was held. We had a good, you know, tournament started on a Thursday. We had a good Thursday, getting out there, catching bait, finding fish. And, you know, we found this particular fish on a Friday at about 7 p.m. I hooked it, and fish cooperated. Team did a fantastic job, and we had the fish on the boat right at dark.
Wow, that's pretty quick for a fish that size. What bait were you
absolutely
using? What'd you catch it on?
It was a live blackfin tuna.
What size? How big was the tuna?
I'd say it was probably 7-8 pounds or so. I mean, it was average-sized blackfin tuna, I guess.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that's a great catch. And, you know, whenever someone catches a fish like that, Donnie, you get the credit. But it's really a team effort. Explain what goes on when a marlin gets hooked up with the team on the boat.
Yeah, absolutely. So first we have the captain who is, driving the boat, making sure I stay tight on the fish and maneuvering the boat around to keep the correct angles on the fish so I can continue gaining line and doesn't get slack in the line so the hook pulls out. Have my mate who is on the leader. Getting the fish up to the boat so, you know, someone else can gaff it. And then we have a couple other people on the boat who's shooting some video the fish just in case fish pops off. We can use that as a release fish. And so, you know, everybody on the boat has a job, something to do, and everyone did a job perfectly. And we're able to, to get this great fish for, you know, one of the best tournaments in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes, it is, and what a great facility it is over down there at Orange Beach. Well, this fish came with a pretty good mutual, too. What was the payout for it?
Yeah, right around $405,000 for this fish, which is, you know, extremely large payout. And so that added to a lot of excitement on Saturday night, and we had a good time after that.
I guess you could say that fish was making groceries for you.
That's right.
Donnie, is there any truth to the rumor that you're going to give up the Rouse's Markets gig and turn pro fisherman? You got your publicity agent, Marcy, ready. I can give you a few tips on getting endorsements and all that if you're going to do any of that.
You know, I don't think I'd be able to afford fishing without my day job.
Well, it's a great catch, and certainly you represented the state of Louisiana well in that tournament. Got any future tournaments ahead?
You know, I may fish one more in August, you know, but I'm going to do a little fun fishing before hunting season starts and jump into hunting season as soon as the fall comes and be ready for fishing again next year.
I'm with you. Donnie, thanks for coming on with us to talk about it. And again, congratulations on a fish of a lifetime, really.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, congratulations to your whole team called Grocery Isle. What a name. Fits well. Thank you, Donnie.
Thank you.
There he goes, Donnie Rouse, CEO of Rouse's Markets. And you can see a picture of that huge, monstrous marlin on my Facebook page, if you like. All right, coming back right after this, we got Mike Gallo's going to give us a little fishing report on Lake Pontchartrain, Lake Bourne, North Biloxi Marsh, Chef area, everywhere he has boat will travel. His report is next on the Outdoors with Don DeBute Radio Network. And Born on the Bayou Report with Captain Mike Gallo is a presentation of CETO. You know who they are. Yeah, they call them AAA on the water. And for $249 per year, that gets you a membership for unlimited calls, whether it be to drop you some fuel if you run out, tow-ins, jump start for electrical problems, whatever it takes to get you and your vessel back safely. CETO, peace of mind is mostly what it is, and it's just one phone call away. Captain Chris will sign you up. 504-301-4545, or you can do it online. Just visit CETO.com. Captain Mike joins us now. And Captain Mike, did your trips get canceled in fear of what the storm might have brought in? A lot of people did, unfortunately. It's going to be very fishable this weekend. What's going on?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened with me, Don. My Tennessee group was coming down to fish Friday and today, and we had to make that decision Wednesday evening, and the forecast didn't look too favorable, so we're going to push it into the fall season. I did have successful trips earlier in the week. It was a bit of a grind because the tide was not moving as much as it is today, but it was still productive trips. Had to move around quite a bit, look for bait, either fin fish or shrimp, if you could see shrimp or birds on the water, and the Four Horsemen style popping corks with a gulp below it worked really well, and we put some good boxes of fish together. It just took some time and a lot of moving.
You know, Mike, you mentioned that Four Horsemen cork, and I've been using those too. Why do you select that one? Why do you like that one?
You know, Don, that's interesting. We have this conversation on my boat quite often. I would have told you whatever 10 years ago that a cork's a cork. It floats on the surface, and when a fish bites it, it goes under to let you know you have a bite. I really didn't see any advancements in cork technology, if that's the way to say it. But Aaron over at Four Horsemen, I guess he had a different view, and he wanted a cork that was louder. He wanted the wire to be shorter to where it wouldn't bend. And he set out to make a better product. It's really quite a funny story. You should get him on to tell you about it. He's got a great accent, and it's a really good story. But it just works. It's a very durable cork. It's really loud. It doesn't take as much effort from the fisherman to make a good sound. And that can certainly come in handy if you pop the cork a couple of thousand times a trip. So it just works. It is durable. It is loud. The fish seem to love it. So I go in places in the marsh where I've never seen another boat, and sometimes I find a Four Horsemen cork. So I know somebody's going in there, but now it's to the point when I see one, I want to do two things. I want to clean the marsh up, and I want to get another cork to my arsenal.
Yeah, that sound is important, but what I really like about it is the durability of it. You know, you get the inexpensive ones, and once that wire bends, it's done, you know?
Yep. It's really got a nice wire on it. He also has a sleeve that you can armor the cork. It's kind of like heat shrink. You can put it over the cork and put it in hot water, and you can have older corks that are starting to look bad, the paint's starting to peel off, or you have fish actually bite the cork, and they start to look rough. And he's got these sleeves that you can purchase and sort of revitalize your corks.
Good tip, good tip. Mike, anything else fishermen need to know if they're headed out today? Any advice in which direction to go and where to throw some baits?
Well, I can tell you we certainly needed moving water, and all of our fish were caught where there was hard or shell bottoms. It didn't matter if it was oyster shells or man-made reefs, but those were certainly where we caught fish. I would put the power poles down, and you could hear them in those oyster shells or on that man-made reef. We're fishing in about 6 to 8 feet of water, looking for birds or bait activity on the surface. And if there was going to be fish there, you'd know in 5 or 10 minutes. His fan cast around the boat with the popping corks. And if you didn't catch anything in 5 or 10 minutes, move. But if you did, it may be recurring every 5 or 10 minutes. And then you stick with it, and maybe it continues for a half an hour. Maybe it continues 45 minutes. But if you go 10 or 15 minutes without a fish, move on, find another similar spot, and start the process over. And before you know it, you have 20, 25 fish in the box. And we had fish anywhere from 13 inches to 20. So there's some good-sized trout out there. Of course, there's catfish that'll bite your line. They'll hit that gulp. We still haven't caught any bull reds, but I know they'll be showing up relatively soon. Stay hydrated because it certainly is hot.
All right, all good stuff. Mike, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, they can find you a link from my website to yours. Give them that telephone number if they want to just give you a call, and might want to give that website out too.
Very simple. You can find me at aaofla.com, on social media, Angling Adventures of Louisiana, or the reliable telephone, 985-781-7811.
Great info and report as always. We really appreciate it, Mike, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Thank you, Don. We'll see you next tide.
There you go. Captain Mike Gallo, Angling Adventures of Louisiana. Coming up next, if you're one of the many people who like to jump in a kayak and pedal or paddle up for your fish, Butch Ridgell joins us with the Stroking Theme Report. We also call it the Paddler's Report in conjunction with the Bayou Coast Kayak Fishing Club, brought to you by No Wake Outfitters. And it is next on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. And our Paddler's Report, in conjunction with the Bayou Coast Kayak Fishing Club, is a presentation of No Wake Outfitters. You're going to find them at 1926 Airline Drive, and inside this fine-looking store, you're going to find some fly shop specialists. They also got fly tying and fly fishing classes. Ask about those. You can also pick up some of the latest paddle sports equipment, including the kayaks, some sharp-looking apparel, and outdoor fishing gear and tackle for the local area. Opens up at 10 a.m. today. Stop by and see Justin at No Wake Outfitters, 1926 Airline Drive in Metairie, where the parking is always free. Butch Ridgell joins us now, one of our field reporters. Good morning, Butch. What's going on in the world of kayaking and paddling?
This week's been kind of quiet, Don. Weather, what we thought we were going to have for weather, just that time of year, the heat. Quite a few guys, Justin included from No Wake, were down at ICAST this week. That was the big thing going on down in Orlando.
Yeah, that's the big fishing tackle show, the biggest that there is, and draws people from all over the world there. Very interesting. As far as upcoming tournaments, what's ahead for the paddlers?
Oh, the first thing that we have coming up is going to be September Redfish Rumble for Bayou Coast. I think there's we are having another Hobie Saltwater over in Mobile out of Dolphin Island with the Mobile Club. This time of year, we kind of keep it to a bare minimum because of the heat. And, you know, normally the weather conditions we have right now, you never know what's going to happen. But we try to stay out of the heat as much as we can. It's just, it's been brutal. We've gone a few trips, gone out, but everybody shuts it down probably 9:30, 10 o'clock, they're off the water. Except for a few diehards. We've got some that'll stay all day, but everybody's been pretty quiet. It's, I went Friday and Saturday myself last week. I went to Joe's Cove and Big Lake and West Cove. And with that crazy full moon and the, low tide, it affected with us that morning. It wasn't that great. Caught a few redfish, mostly small reds, a couple of bulls, but it was not the best trip in the world.
You know, Butch, a lot of the rodeos and the tournaments have included kayak categories. So for fishermen that want to do some competing, even if they don't have an all kayak tournament, you can get into the kayak categories. And also the Star's got its own kayak categories too. So there's a lot of opportunity for doing in some competitive fishing out of the kayaks.
Oh yeah. We actually got a notice from Grand Isle Tarpon Rodeo. They're making sure that all us guys knew on the Bayou Coast side that they had a kayak division. And also, Fushan Tarpon Rodeo has a kayak division. So, but, you know, everybody gets into it every now and then. Some of us will fish it. If anybody wants to get out and give it a shot, they win some great, beautiful-looking trophies and some nice, you know, some nice prizes.
You know, how good would it be to catch a tarpon out of a kayak?
Well, we do have a friend that does that down at the bar.
I know. It brings to mind that photograph that he took of that. That was incredible. We're talking about – give him the name. Tell him who that is.
That's Chris. I'm drawing a blank. Chris. Friend. Oh, Chris Holmes.
Yeah,
oh,
Chris
yeah,
Holmes.
Chris. Chris has got a beautiful picture, the one half in, half to water with that Chris has got a lot of great pictures. I mean, he's done it. But Chris is he's a heck of an angler. I'm surprised he hadn't gone down there. It's that time the tarpon are running right now. But
his kayak fishing is only exceeded by his photography skills. I believe he won an award for that picture. We're talking about sitting in a kayak with a tarpon, and you can see part of the tarpon above the waterline with Chris holding it in the kayak, and you can see the rest of the fish under. I don't know how he took that picture.
It was some special camera that he had that would that was floating out there that would take both. I saw it, talked to him shortly thereafter that came out. Paddle Palooza, Fallen Tide, or something like that. He's always at those two tournaments, and he told us what it was. But that was a great photo.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask him to send it to me, and I can post it on the website because I'm sure people will be interested to see that. It's pretty incredible, and he's a great fisherman and really a real good sportsman. He deer hunts, and he gets around for sure. Well, Butch, anything else we need to tell the paddlers before we wrap up?
That's it, man. It's that time of year. It's kind of in between and betwixt right now. But you want to get out, invite it, do it, be safe, hydrate, all that good stuff. But things will be cranking back up in the fall, basically, for us.
Yeah, we got Ride the Bull coming up out of Grand Isle. Sure hope those big bulls start showing up in the passes for the tournament.
Yeah, there's a few there already. But, Ride the Bull. Hopefully we died at not a crazy tide. We have a good day.
Very good. Butch, thanks for the report. We appreciate it. Hope you have a good week on the water this week.
Thank you, man.
All right. There he goes, Butch Ridgell, one of our reporters. We also hear from Eric Mohabarak, Louisiana Kayak Company, Brendan Bayard, and also Lance Burgess. All right, we come back after this. It's everybody's favorite. We call it the bad boy of the outdoors, guy sitting in jail as we speak, and a $250,000 fine. We'll tell you his crime and his time right after this on The Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. Deb in Florida checking in. She says, great that you talked to Donnie Rouse this morning about his large fish. Is it going to get sliced up and sold at the store? No, I don't think so, Deb. She says, I actually interviewed Donnie Rouse years ago when they were opening a store in New Orleans. I think it was early on in that adventure for them. Anyway, congratulations to Donnie on his big fish. We also have this question in from Manley. He wants to know, this is from Alabama, will the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fishery Commission consider comments from hunters outside the state of outside the state, actually from Alabama. I don't think they will, because the hunter survey that they sent out to HIP holders, they discounted any out-of-state responses, did not include them, which I think is totally unfair. If you pay your non-resident fee, and I do that for a lot of states, I think you should have a voice in it. But unfortunately, I don't think your comments would be counted. But it wouldn't hurt to send them in anyway. All right, we have this one, and I'll try to get to that, David, on the sequestration, the carbon sequestration comment. It's a little long. All right, we also have, we got another one that's coming in here. Said, shouldn't the public have the last say on these carbon projects and not the Corps? These companies use the government to hide behind to do these destructive projects, and the public vote on it, because the people of the public are the government. You make a lot of sense. And, yes, I think the public should have the last say, but unfortunately, the Army Corps of Engineers is the one that grants it, and they don't take votes on it from the public, but they do take public comment. And also another comment, want to know, how did it get this far so quick? And when I heard from the elected representatives from that area, they have been trying their hardest to get an EIS, to get a delay, and they're kind of getting stonewalled on it. This thing is up and running and rolling. All right, we got a bad boy for you. We do this every Saturday morning. We honor some of those who are the most despicable cases of outdoor outlaws, and we got one for you this morning. His nickname is Doc, and we'll tell you his story when we come back right after this quick 10-second pause to let our local stations tell you who they are and where they are along the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. Well, federal investigators said Doc Antle, a.k.a. the Tiger King, on a Netflix TV documentary, which I haven't had the opportunity to watch, he's also the owner of the Myrtle Beach Safari. He funneled payments through the nonprofit called the Rare Species Fund, and he used some bulk cash transaction, falsified records to disguise illegal sales of endangered animals, which included baby chimpanzees, cheetahs, lions, and tigers. Oh, my. All of those are protected under federal law and international treaties. Now, last week, Doc pled guilty to conspiracy charges involving violations of the Lacey Act, which, as you know, involves the interstate transportation of illegal fish or wildlife, and money laundering. The federal investigation revealed that from February to April of 2022, Annell and a co-defendant laundered over $500,000, believed to be proceeds from an operation smuggling undocumented immigrants across the U.S.-Mexico border. He was into a lot of stuff. The prosecutor said Annell attempted to conceal the cash by issuing checks that appeared to be for construction services related to the Myrtle Beach Safari, which is a 50-acre for-profit zoo that offers close encounters with exotic wildlife. So, sentenced to 12 months in federal, a fine of $55,000, and ordered to serve 3 years of unsupervised release and forfeiture of three chimpanzees and more than $197,000 to the government, is 64-year-old Bhagavan Antle, the guy also known as Doc, the Tiger King, and now a bad boy of the outdoors. Yeah, there's no end to him. And this one, he's a well-deserved jail sentence. He's sitting in the jail, maybe listening to the show. I don't know if they get it in prison. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by a couple of guys that love waterfowl hunting, very passionate about it. Ryan Lambert, you know him as the Plastic Man, and also Josh Goins from the Flyway Federation. We're going to talk about why you might need to contact the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries Commission before their next commission meeting and making a determination for the next 5 years of duck hunting in Louisiana, and also how you can get some information from the Flyway series about the migration alteration and what maybe can be done to turn that around. They are next, coming up on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. As he goes by the name of Plastic Man, talking about Captain Ryan Lambert, who joins us now along with Josh Goins from the Flyway Federation. Gentlemen, good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Don.
All right, here's the situation for listeners. The Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has a decision to make with regard to the next five, not this season, but the next five seasons for waterfowl hunters. Waterfowl are managed on a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service federal basis, but they give states and flyways the opportunity to make choices on zones and the number of splits that they would have during the season. Here's where it sits. Right now, based on a small sample size from a survey, the biologist with Department of Wildlife and Fisheries recommended that we continue with option A, which would be a two-zone, a west and east zone, with three season segments. There are some other options. Ryan, you and I have been talking for a long time about the need for a coastal zone option, which would be what's called option D, which would make the entire lower coast be able to set its own seasons and also its zone as far as the dates. Tell people why that's important.
Well, it's because we're coastal, we're tidal, we have tides in. Like this year, we'll have 26 days with negative tides under negative 0.3, which means we can't go to the blind. Our blinds will be high and dry after negative 0.3, and that's the bottom of it. It goes all the way to a negative 1.2, which you can't get to the canal to go to your blind. So, you know, I've been looking for why this is. Why do we have a east and west? And I've had people tell me, well, the west gets birds out of the central flyway, and they get there first, so, you know, we want to open it. Well, the fact that I am in the west zone and I'm as far south and east as we can be down in the Venice area, that blows that out the water because we're not getting anything out the central flyway. So then they say they want everybody else to shoot first so that the birds will, the pressure will drive them into the middle for their opening weekend. Well, for the people in the coastal zone to sacrifice 26 days, and next year between Christmas, right before Christmas and the end of the season, it'll be 33 days that we won't be able to hunt. I mean, that's taking away half of your season. So I urge everyone to go and contact the Wildlife Commission to get a coastal zone. We want two zones, a north and a south. There's no reason to have an east and west. Birds migrate from the north. So why do we have an east and west? I have no idea. But the only logical explanation for having two zones is because there's some specific entity like tides that would justify having two zones. And if we have two zones, we could have three different splits. If we have three zones, we can only have one split. You know, the first split, the second split is two splits, but only one split in a season. So that's federally mandated. So to have a north-south zone with three splits, they could close it during those negative tides to where we don't waste our whole season not being able to hunt.
Josh, what are your thoughts on the coast, what would be called, I guess, a coastal zone, a north and a south, as opposed to a west and an east, which includes Shreveport and Venice in the same zone, which makes no sense to me.
I can tell you I fully agree with that, Don, that whenever Ryan had told me that the other night on the phone, I was like, you got to be kidding me, man. But the whole thing is, yes, Ryan was right whenever he was talking about birds coming out of the central flyway. Whenever you read any of the old meeting minutes from Richard K. Yancey, that's what he was pointing out back then. But with the current situation that we have within the flyways and the different issues of birds short-stopping and all that, I mean, what else can hurt us? I mean, let's try something new and let's do this because, honestly, I agree with Ryan 100%. Let's go north-south zone and split it just like they're saying, and let's see what happens. I honestly think it could really help because I was one of those tidal hunters at my property just like Ryan. I've been there. I've been stuck in the marsh and had to call to get another boat to come pull me out, and it's not fun.
Yeah, especially when you got hard freezes and, you know, temperatures that are dropping down below freezing. It can be a safety hazard, right, Ryan?
Well, yeah, when you have 500 boats coming to Venice on opening weekend, you know, people, a lot of guys that just say, let's go hunting, they don't understand what the tide will do and to see ahead of time a negative tide. And you get out there and at 8 o'clock in the morning, your decoys are sitting in the mud and so are you. and a giant cold front comes like we had last year, you're taking people's lives in their hands then. Well, last year they had to go rescue people out there because of the same reason. You know, there's a story that you could go look up the day the duck hunters died that happened up north. You know, people got caught in a storm and it killed them. But it can very easily happen here because you're stuck in the mud and it's not coming up till that night. It's going to be a long, long, long time for you to get rescued if you can't get a hold. And a lot of times there's no self-service down there either. So, you know, and it's not here. It's all the way to the west side of the state. It's in the Chapel Eye. Anywhere that's tidal, you have those negative tides. You can see where they are from here to the end of time on the tide chart. And it's very easy to manipulate the seasons to where we don't hunt that. And the fact that it's dry, the ducks go 10 miles offshore. You know, they just sit out in the bay until that night when the water comes in, they come back in and feed. So there's no ducks to go get anyhow unless you got a pond that holds water and you can't get to it because you can't get around the marsh to get to a pond that might hold water. So, you know, it's just a detrimental thing for everybody and for us to give up 30 days of our season for what? You know, just, it's so easy to fix it.
Well, I've got a lot of people that have asked about what's the best way to contact them. I guess you could go and appear before them at the next commission meeting under the public comments, but it's probably much easier to shoot them an email. What should they include in the email to the commissioners, which they can find on the website?
Yeah, it's very simple. Just we want a north-south zone with three splits. Because of the negative tides, we need a coastal zone. And the fact that we have to deal with negative tides from Christmas till the end of the season, you know, we miss our whole January. So, you know, just write to them and tell them that's what you want. You know, we could put up a letter that they, all they have to do is sign their name to it. If they want, we could put it on your website if you like.
Yeah, we can do that and also put it on your site.
I'm willing to put it on mine, Ryan, just like I said the other day, and I've shared it to many people, and I honestly think they need to use that letter. And you know what? Even if you don't agree with this north-south, write in and state your voice. Like, tell them what you want, because as of right now, they're doing whatever they want.
Yeah, it's a very small sample size.
Yeah, 6,000 people, and a lot of those didn't get back. And I only know four people that it went to. And if it went to the guys in the north, they don't have any inkling of what goes on down here with the tide, so they don't care. Oh, it's fine like it is. Just leave it like it is. Well, the people in the south suffer, so we really need to get the people that hunt anywhere below Highway 90 involved to where, well, they understand because they know they're hunting in no water. They can't go hunting most of the season. So the only way to change it is your voice and to write in and tell them, you know, it's very short. Like I said, we have a letter that's already drafted up that everybody can send in. It's this numbers that matter. You know, they've sent in 6,000 surveys. I don't know how many they got back, but, you know, it's nothing for us to get 6,000 people to write in and say, yeah, guys, look, we really want north-south. That's all you have to do. We vote for north-south zone this year. I mean, simple stuff.
Yeah, and it's going to be, we'll have to live with it for the next 5 years. Guys, stay with me. We're going to take a break. We come back. I want to talk about Josh's Flyway series. It's a great podcast that's coming out, and this is not the only issue dealing with waterfowl. There's so much dissatisfaction in Louisiana and other coastal zone states about the seasons and the migration being altered and lots of things to talk about. We'll be back to do that right after this pause. You're listening to Outdoors with Don Dubuque, Radio Network. All right, I want to remind folks, it's very urgent that you contact the commission with regard to that. They'll be setting that for the 2026 through 30. That's 5 years. And there's only about 2 weeks before they meet again because it's got to be submitted to the feds by August the 30th, and they won't meet again before that. So it's coming up very quickly. Don't delay. Do it today. All right, back with Josh Goins with the Flyway Series and Ryan Lambert, Cajun Fishing Adventures. Josh, you started a podcast with Duke Lowry, and I got to tell you, you've done a wealth of research. As somebody that has to do research, you have dug deep into the archives, and we don't have a lot of time to get into the duckweed here, but if you would explain to what people will hear and listen to when they find your podcast called Flyway Series, and also the duck sickles too.
Oh yeah. So Don, first off, I'd heard you attach my name to Flyway Federation, and yes, I am still the founder, still support them. They're fixing to be going back live, their website, and pushing. But Flyway Series is just something that me and Duke got together because we've been doing all this research for so many years. Duke was fighting this fight way before me. But we thought that we wanted to educate the public because, Don, if you told someone a story on your show and you only told them the last few sentences, they wouldn't understand the whole story of why someone's talking about this. And anyone could come in and tell them something different and change their mind. So we decided to get this together, and we got with Rex Moncrief. And he has the Outdoor News, and you can go find him on YouTube, Facebook. I'm talking about any social media platform. And we're putting the real facts out, and we're putting them in a timeline from where it all started to where we are now. And I think right now we're in about the late 60s. But as we're going through the show, we reference, as you said, to the Duck Sickles. We'll reference certain things to show people, hey, this is happening right now, and if you look at this, they talked about this back then as history repeating itself. So everyone needs to tune in and actually get the real facts of what happened in the flyway in Louisiana.
Yeah, you uncovered some things that even some biologists were not aware of, and I go back to following waterfowl and a lot of those things. I remember, you know, with Phil Robertson implementing the mallard releases and the request to get the ducks in, and the actual successful shortstopping. Some people deny shortstopping exists or is even possible, but it was certainly done with the Canada geese, and y'all talk about that. It's a great series that you're doing, it, and it airs live on Thursday nights, but they can always catch the replays, correct?
Yes, sir. And if you go to the Facebook page, mine, I'm personally shared. Duke is. I think Ryan has shared some. But you can catch it on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. And it's normally, I mean, it can, I don't know how long the shows will get later on, but it's a great show. And then we shorten it up in shorter segments for the people that just want to listen on their drive to work. So, yeah, tune in and learn some history with us.
Yeah, and Ryan, over the years, you've seen quite a decline like most people have, especially the absence of mallards and other species.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for it, and hopefully we can address some of that so we don't continue to lose the amount of duck hunters. I mean, we've got so many people in Louisiana now that travel to other states to go duck hunting, and it used to be the other way around.
Yeah, that ruins the economy. I mean, just the money that used to come into Louisiana was immense from duck season. And, you know, we've had the worst 3 years in a row on duck counts in South Louisiana or in Louisiana in general. You know, the worst season is 3 days in 3 years in a row. And this season doesn't appear to be any better because there's a lot of dryness up there. The duck counts are down. And if they stop in the ones that are there, you know, it's going to be detrimental. You know, they should be able to do that on game reserves. They shouldn't do it on you know, those big reserves that hold all those birds up there. You know, it hurts the hunters up there as well. You know, they do telemetry now. They know exactly what the birds do. So
yeah, and you can find out a lot more about that on the Flyway Series with Josh. Thanks for being with us, Josh. We'll get you back on as we get a little closer to the season. And, Ryan, when we get those counts in. And thank you both for what you do for waterfowl hunters. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And that's going to wrap it up for us. We'll be back again next week, 5 to 7, for The Outdoors with Don Dubuque, Radio Network.